Hello and welcome to Dead Man's Chest. I'm Neil and I'm joined as always by Becky.
Hi.
And we're a day late.
We are a day late. That's my fault.
I have to admit, this episode has kind of crept up on us. It's like, holy shit, it's Monday. Have we got a show? And it's like, no. It's like, right, okay, so we've put it back a day.
Yeah, but we're still here.
We're still here. I actually have news.
You have news?
I have actual news.
Oh, wow, this is exciting.
About actual stuff that is actually going to happen.
Woo!
You've probably seen it, and we're watching it as well. Disney Plus show, The Mandalorian. The story is that season two will not be held up.
Good. By, it's quite good, actually.
By COVID-19. It's actually expected to drop in the UK, in the US, in the autumn 2020.
Ooh, nice. So we'll get it shortly afterwards.
I hope so. And there's
a nice winter thing.
There's been some news about characters that are apparently going to appear. Now, you haven't been watching this, but I have. The animated series, The Clone Wars.
Yeah, well, I've seen bits of The Clone Wars as you
now,
put it on.
There is a character in The Clone Wars called Ahsoka Tano. And she
she's the one with the weird headdress. Like, she looks Egyptian.
Kind of. And it's like zebra pattern, sort of hairy kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, she is actually, in that series, she's Anakin Skywalker's Padawan learner. But that character actually is going to appear in The Mandalorian season
exciting.
2, which is very cool. Played by Rosario Dawson, by all accounts.
Okay.
So
I just love Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Baby Yoda's cute.
I'm absolutely loving the series so far.
Yeah.
But I've still got a few episodes to go. I don't want to smash it because I know...
You're not doing a box set, Becky.
No. I know I'll be pissed off when it's over if I hit it all in one go. The other thing I heard as well this week is there is a film in the... I guess it's kind of part of the X-Men franchise.
Mm.
And it's called The New Mutants. Now,
right, okay.
This film has been in existence in one way or another for years, and they just could not get it sorted. They couldn't get it finished. And then the takeover happened with Disney buying up Fox, so that delayed it again. And then I think it ran into other problems, and then I think COVID-19 has happened, and it's a mess. Anyway, it is expected they've hit us with a new release date.
Cool.
Which is August the 28th.
Cool.
No one on the planet is expecting it to actually be released on August the 28th. Maybe next year.
Well, because what happens if the cinemas aren't open?
Well, that's
does it.
It
get released straight to DVD?
I mean, they've been kind of putting things out to stream, haven't they?
Yeah,
that you
so
can
much stream it.
You can buy it to, well, you can sort of rent it almost and stream it. That has been happening. It actually stars Game of Thrones, Maisie Williams,
yeah.
And the one last bit I've come across, well, two last bits actually, on the BBC Sounds app.
Yeah.
They've got loads of podcasts.
Yeah.
And the one that really caught my eye was the Louis Theroux one.
Okay.
So I think it is him just catching up with like famous friends.
Louis Theroux's famous book.
I love Louis Theroux. So I will try and hit a couple of episodes of that and see what it's like.
Yeah.
It's bound to be good because
Louis, isn't he?
He's just got such
a... He does what he says on the tin, really.
He's just got such a way about him that I can't help but like his style of interviewing and how he researches and how he presents. Last bit. On Prime Video, there is a series called The Hunters.
Okay.
And I had a quick look at this, and it's kind of got one foot in reality.
Yeah.
It's set in New York, primarily, in the 70s. Mm. And they are... The Hunters are a group of Jews.
Okay.
And they hunt Nazis.
Oh. Oh, okay.
So if you've ever seen if you've ever seen Inglourious Basterds,
yeah, I think I've seen this on the Fire Stick. I think. Yeah.
Now it the bit that it sticks to that actually happened is what they called Operation Paperclip, and what happened after the war ended, World War II, is literally the day after America and Russia started baring their teeth at each other, and each one wanted to outdo the other, and the target weirdly became who can get to the moon first.
Okay,
now to achieve that, America and Russia were fighting over the top German scientists.
Yeah.
Because despite them being a bunch of psychotic assholes, the Nazis did have some very clever people working through for them.
Of course they did.
So, what happened was a lot of these scientists and engineers and whoever moved to America, and their identity was kind of wiped out, and they were given an American identity.
Right, okay.
Kind of with the understanding, come and work for us and help us do this, and we'll forget all about that nasty business back in back in the war.
You know, wipe everything clean.
And it worked. I mean, they won the space race. A lot of, you know, where America sort of got to the front of the field in a lot of areas was on the back of these German scientists and engineers. The hunters are Jews who...
Has it got Morgan Freeman in it?
No.
No.
It's the only real big name who you will know for sure is Al Pacino.
Oh, is it? Is it Al Pacino in it?
And yeah, they are survivors of the death camps. It's done very respectfully.
Yeah.
And there are funny moments, but you don't want to laugh too much.
Yeah,
Just because they're making light of what happened in the camps doesn't mean you can still laugh at it.
Mm.
Well worth a watch. If you enjoyed Inglourious Basterds, I would say it's it's very much in that vein.
Okay, cool.
We've got this show, we've got sort of four quite different films, haven't we?
Well,
a couple of comic book ones.
Yeah.
But two very different ones as well.
Yeah.
So what's your first one?
Well, my first one, because, you know, I absolutely adore them.
Yeah.
It's The Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Not Volume 1.
Volume 1.
As it's affectionately known as.
Yes.
It's not just called Guardians of the Galaxy, it's actually affectionately known by fans as Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1.
Yeah.
So it was directed in 2014. Oh,
God.
Whoa, I know, it's crazy. By James Gunn.
Yep.
He also wrote it with Nicola Perlman.
Yep.
Yep. It stars Chris Pratt.
Yep.
Zoe Salander, David Bautista. Is that how I pronounce it? Vin Diesel, of course.
How is Vin Diesel actually even in the credits?
I know. Well, he was...
For his one line.
I am Groot.
Which apparently the only work he really had to do was record that in different languages.
Yeah, yeah.
Je m'appelle Groot.
And then you've got Bradley Cooper, Lee Pace, Michael Rooker, and Karen Gillan. And it goes on and on and on. Okay?
Yeah.
So the music was done by Tyler Bates.
The music is a huge part of this film.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So the budget... It's a big budget. $232.3 million.
Okay.
And they took at the box office $772.8 million.
It's not massive for that kind of budget.
It's still quite a sizable return.
It's very sizable, but you'd almost expect more.
Well, yeah, exactly. For that budget. Yeah. It's got an IMDb rating of 8.
Before you go into it, this film was... the turning point for Marvel.
Yeah.
This Marvel Cinematic Universe that we know. This was the turning point. Because it was the risk. This was the only risk Marvel have taken.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Because at this point, they had an established cast, if you like. We'd had a couple of Iron Man films, we'd had a couple of Thors, we'd had a couple of Captain Americas, we'd had an Avengers film. And then, rather than carry on with that, they gave us Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And I remember it coming out, it was like, who the fuck are these guys?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they are part of Marvel.
They are, they absolutely.
They aren't a comic book on their own.
When this was a success, this meant at this after that, Marvel could do whatever they wanted.
Exactly. And as you said before, the music in the film plays such an important part.
It is.
I mean, you've got songs like Hooked on a Feeling, I'm yeah. Not in Love, I Want You Back, and my all-time favourite, Escape, which is a Pina Colada song, which we're obsessed with, aren't we? So, the storyline. I'll just give you a brief storyline. Peter escapes from the planet Morag.
He does.
With a valuable orb.
Yep.
That Ronan the Accuser wants. He eventually forms a group of unwilling heroes to stop Ronan.
Yeah, now, Ronan the Accuser...
is Thanos' son.
No.
Yes.
Ronan the Accuser is Kree.
Yeah, but his name's his son. This is.
Is he?
He said it in the film.
Okay.
I watched it this afternoon.
I don't know if we knew where Thanos was actually from.
Yeah, so you have Nebula and Ronan.
Yeah.
Because she calls him brother.
Okay.
So they're Thanos' actual offspring.
Gamora's adopted. Yeah.
Because, well, we'll get to that in the second one.
Yeah.
So yeah, Gamora's adopted. Basically, she got basically trained to kill.
Yeah.
She
was an assassin.
So, but then when she meets Peter and the rest of them in the prison, you know, she changes. You know, she becomes bad to good. It's quite a nice sort of change, you know.
Because Ronan the Accuser, now this film, because of how Marvel have released their films, and you get some films that are set years before and others are set years after and everything, and it's a bit hard to relate him to the sort of wimp that we meet in Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Now Ronan is Kree.
Yes. And he is Kree.
He's in this film, he is Ronan the Accuser.
Yeah.
But the Accusers were almost like a special branch of the Kree.
Well, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, it was like literally, if you wanted an argument settled quickly, it was right, send the Accusers.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is where we discover the Infinity Stones.
This is one of the... I think this is the... is this the first time we see an actual stone?
Yes.
We'd come across one before in the Avengers.
Right.
In the Avengers
Which
Assemble.
Which colour was it?
That was blue. That was in Loki's spear.
Right, okay. So this was the purple.
This was the purple one.
Which is the... and I can't remember.
Reality.
I'll have to Google that one.
Yeah, quick Google. Yeah, but I think this was the first time we'd seen an actual stone.
Yes, because it comes out, the orb gets taken apart in the collector's shop.
Yeah.
When they go to nowhere.
Yes.
Which is a mining colony. There you go. Hang on, let me just...
Isn't there a massive punch-up in a bar? In that.
Yes. They're
mainly because of Rocket and Drax, yes?
Yeah, basically. Let me...
just have a look at it.
No, right.
So this
is how the lineup is.
Okay.
So the blue stone is the space stone.
That is the one that was in Loki's spear.
The yellow stone is a mind stone.
That was in Vision.
Yeah. The red is reality.
That was in Dark World.
Yeah. The purple is the power stone.
Right.
The green is the time stone, so that would be Doctor Strange.
Yes.
And the, I would say, amber is the soul stone.
Yes, which is guarded, that we don't find out until quite a while later, is actually guarded by the Red Skull.
Oh, there you go.
From Captain America.
There you go. So, yeah, so basically Peter gets the orb, he collects the orb, and then when they're in the collector's office, the orb gets taken apart, and then all this thing comes up, and he decides to, do that. But the music and how it's placed within the film is just so spot on.
They all get arrested, don't they? And they get...
Yeah.
They're in jail.
They are in jail.
Now, I seem to remember Peter starting almost a riot over his Walkman.
Yes, he does. and then, unfortunately, he gets electrocuted.
Yeah.
Because the guard won't give it up,
Now, Peter's not an alien.
No.
He's from Earth.
He's from Earth. He, at the beginning of the film, it's set in 1988. He's in hospital waiting for his mum because she's dying of cancer.
She is.
I think it's a brain tumour, if I'm rightly correct.
And the reason the Walkman and the music are so important to him is because his mum gave them to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
So, yeah, it does sound a bit unreasonable starting a riot over a Walkman.
But it's important to him, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so basically they... basically fight off Ronan, but with Peter he actually touches the stone.
He does,
and he doesn't die from it.
No,
but I'll explain that later on,
yeah,
because otherwise it's gonna give away my second one.
Now the characters we mentioned as the Guardians, at this point we've met the Avengers, and we see that they all clearly have their strengths. And by the end of Avengers Assemble, they've learned how to put all those strengths together.
Yeah.
Guardians are different.
Yeah. they kind of wing it a little bit. So you've got Peter Quill, who's Star-Lord.
Now, they're about as dysfunctional as you get.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So you've got Peter Quill, Star-Lord.
Yeah.
You've got Drax.
Now, Drax is...
a character, isn't he?
He's very special.
He's very special. You've got Gamora...
yep.
You've got Rocket.
No, Rocket is the raccoon.
The raccoon, yeah. And then you've got my favourite. Am Groot.
You have
the tree.
Groot, which is a tree.
Which is a very big tree.
Rocket and Groot come as a pair, don't they?
They do, yeah. Yeah.
And where there's one, there's the other. But Groot, to be as kind as we can be, he's not the sharpest tool in the box.
No.
Because he starts most of the problems in the prison, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Because Rocket's explaining the plan.
Yeah, but Groot
and
just
then
starts.
Groot, yeah, so Groot goes to a certain light and decides, right, let's just... because he thinks that Rocket means it's got to be done right now.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it all kicks off. They manage to get out of the prison.
Just.
And then you've got this whole thing of Hondu as well, and and then the whistling stick.
So Hondu is the Ravengers.
Yeah.
Now Peter was trained by the Ravengers
because he got abducted.
Yeah.
From Earth to them.
Yeah, by Hondu.
Yeah.
He controls his arrow by whistling.
Whistling, yeah.
Which is very cool.
It is very cool.
Now, did you spot the little Easter egg at the end?
Probably not.
I believe it's the long-awaited return of Howard the Duck.
Oh, is it?
Is at the end of Guardians.
Really?
Of the
Guardians. After the credits?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't get that far.
That place where the collector is, where everywhere it's completely trashed.
Yeah.
There's Howard the Duck, I think, smoking.
Probably a cigar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... we'll talk about Howard later as well.
Well, Howard was the birth of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I love Howard.
Yeah.
I know the film was a bit weird, but...
a bit weird. for those of you who don't know, Howard the Duck was the very first episode of a previous podcast, In Defense Of. And it was literally an hour in, and I still didn't actually know what was happening. Very, very, very strange film.
But I will speak of Howard the Duck later on as well. In my second offering this evening.
Okay.
So, yeah, you'll know.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'm quite a know-it-all on this one. But no, I love Guardians. I think they're amazing. I think the comedy between them, they just bounce off each other really, really well. The music's absolutely perfect in it. You know, you've got a mixture of like 70s, 80s.
Probably.
In there. So, you know, it's quite a nice mix. So, yeah, I'd go watch it.
We also meet the characters who will be, I think, a future film in the Marvel universe, the Nova.
Yep, the Nova Corps.
The Nova Corps. I think we will meet those again in the future.
Yeah, see, that's headed up by Glenn Close.
It is.
With Nova Prime.
Yeah, and John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly, my man. I like him as well. He's a very good actor. So, yeah. So that's my first offering. What's your first offering?
Mine is a film that shows that sometimes a comic book film, although successful, had its problems. 2018, starring Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy.
Venom.
I like this.
So did I, and so did a lot of people, actually. It had a budget originally of 100 million, and it went up to 116 million.
Okay, not a big jump.
But at the box office, it took a little over 856 million.
Wow.
Right, a lot of people went to see this.
Yeah.
Probably for Tom Hardy.
No.
Now... he's probably the biggest name there. Even the supporting cast aren't overly well known. Michelle Williams,
well, she's quite well known.
I know, and Woody Harrelson.
Well, yeah, she's quite known as well.
Woody Harrelson. He only pops up at the end for about a minute.
Yeah, I know, but he's still, you know, he's the guy in Cheers.
Yes. there is going to be a sequel next year.
Yay.
Which has been delayed from this year.
Yeah, obviously.
And it's got a bit of a lackluster name,
it's
really.
It's going to be a lot more carnage.
It's called Let There Be Carnage.
Oh, Let There Be
Carnage. which is a bit of a letdown, really, for a sequel. Now, this film got a lot of heat. Now, sometimes the problem with a comic book film, the biggest problem, are comic book fans.
Yeah.
And the most common complaint you will ever hear is, well, that's not how it happened in the comics.
But isn't the point of a film to have that artistic license to bend it slightly to relate to everybody?
Exactly. My argument is, yeah, this is not what we saw in the comic books. But we've already seen that story. Here's a different take on it. There are still people out there upset that the Joker had an origin story in Batman 89. The comic book film genre is a very tricky place to be.
It is, because you'll get those diehard fans saying, no, it's got to be like the comic book.
I get their point in places, but on the other side of it, it's like, well, yeah, I get that, but why not have a different take on events? We're still going to end up in the same place, yeah. Roughly.
Yeah, of course you are.
Let's just
mix it up.
Have a bit of fun with it.
Yeah.
The film starts with a mission to coming back to Earth, isn't it? The shuttle.
Yes, if I can remember rightly.
And it crashes, and the shuttle has been carrying these specimens, which all escape.
Of course.
No, one of them, I think they have a couple that go missing. Just yeah. Maybe one.
I really can't remember.
And they are taken back to the laboratory, and they are trying to get these... they look like tar, don't they?
Yeah, they look like
those really sticky mess things. They're trying to get them to bond with a human host. And host after host are being killed because they're just not compatible with the symbiote.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy plays a reporter, Eddie Brock, who's... I think he's probably been fired. He's a real pain in the ass. He doesn't really give a shit about the rules and He doesn't really give a shit about what his boss tells him either.
No, he just
if he thinks there's a story, he's going to push for it. Now, he breaks into this laboratory and he gets infected, I guess,
yeah,
by this symbiote, which identifies itself as Venom.
Yeah.
And there are some very funny moments.
They are.
When he's starting to learn how this thing works. Or what it wants. Because
he does work with it in the end, doesn't he? He does kind of get on board with it and sort of just like lets him do its thing, I suppose.
I think it takes him a little while to trust it.
Well, yeah, I think so. And control it as well.
Because there are sort of some almost, I guess, nice moments between Eddie and Venom.
Yeah. I just find it really funny. There's
one bit where that makes me really laugh, where he's broken into an office in a high rise building, and they're like near the top floor.
Yeah.
And Venom's like, we could jump out the window.
And Eddie's like, no.
And Eddie's like, no, it's okay.
Yeah.
And Venom's like, it's okay, we'll catch you.
Yeah.
And Eddie's like, no. And then the very next scene is Eddie pushing the button for the elevator.
Yeah.
And you just hear Venom's voice go, pussy.
Yeah.
So
it's just those like little one-liners that's in it. It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, you've got this creature that can do pretty much anything. And then you've got Eddie that's, well, scared of heights. And he's not too keen on killing people. But they come to a compromise that they'll only kill bad people.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
What Eddie does learn is that the symbiote is, unless it's fed properly, i.e. people, meat, and chocolate, I think.
Yes, chocolate.
Unless it's fed these things, it starts to sort of basically destroy Eddie's internal organs.
Yeah.
To the point where he would die.
Yeah.
So... yeah, they have to come to a little bit of a compromise.
Yeah, exactly. In the end.
All the other creatures are eventually captured or destroyed.
Yeah.
Now, in the end credits, we meet Eddie going to interview somebody in prison.
Yeah.
Which is Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Woody Harrelson should be in prison, but...
he shouldn't. Well, his character is, so, you know, he's got to go
and
with it.
Woody Harrelson's character says something along the lines of, when I get out of here, it's going to be carnage.
Yeah.
Which suggests... now, in the comic books, Carnage, if I remember correctly, was actually the offspring of Venom.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, Carnage... Venom, you could always kind of...
like?
I don't know if like was the word, but... If you found that he was on your side,
you
could kind of work with him.
Okay, so you had to kind of win him round.
There were times. I think there was a limited comic run of the Punisher and Venom.
Yeah,
and there, at one point they were kind of on the same page with each other.
Yeah,
and this has happened a lot with Venom. Even times when he's worked more or less with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there were times when you could find that middle ground with him.
Mm-hmm.
Carnage, no. He was just...
adamant.
He was just a menace, and it was just like, destroy fucking everything. So it will be interesting to see
how
they play this
how
one.
How it develops.
Woody Harrelson, I don't know. I really don't know.
He's quite a versatile actor, actually.
He is.
I've seen him in, like, bad roles, and he's actually, like bad guy roles, not, like, bad roles.
I think the person that Carnage actually attached himself to was a serial killer called Cletus something.
Right.
And it would depend very much, because, obviously... the character Venom and the character Carnage are going to be CGI, to which they can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
it depends very much on the human aspect of that character, which will be Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
So it will depend how he plays it, how he comes across. I am looking forward to it, and I would like to see Venom as part of the extended
Marvel Universe.
I don't know if we'll see him in the Marvel Universe. I think we might see him with Spider-Man.
Okay.
See, Sony still own Spider-Man, and by extent, they own Venom. So we might see Tom Holland Spider-Man.
So this isn't a Marvel thing?
No.
Is it Sony in association with Marvel?
No, this is Sony doing their own thing.
Right, okay.
But, like I said, they own the rights to it. There is no mention in this film of Spider-Man, of the Avengers, of anything.
It really is just a standalone.
It is. Will we see him with Tom Holland as Spider-Man? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Sony would be stupid not to.
Yeah.
But it depends. Do we then see two different versions of the same Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Would, because, I mean, Tom Holland is their Spider-Man, so
that's
not up for discussion. Would a Venom film with Spider-Man exist? Would that Spider-Man be the same Spider-Man as we've seen with Iron Man and Captain America?
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Or
would it be Tom Holland playing two versions of the same character?
Yeah.
It's very tricky.
It is very tricky. And how would you marry the two characters together?
I really don't know. And I'm pleased it's not me that has to figure that out.
Yeah, me.
Because at the moment, Sony do not have the rights to even mention Iron Man and Captain America and everything. Only a film in association with Marvel.
You can do.
Can that all happen? This wouldn't be. This would be their own production, their own everything.
Yeah.
So it'd be really tricky. Or do they cast another Spider-Man to fill that film? That would feel really messy.
It would feel horrendous. Yeah.
The other option I did hear was that they would use the character, I think, Eric Morales.
Right.
Who a lot of us would know as the main character from Into the Spider-Verse.
Right.
Now, Eric was... he became Spider-Man because he sort of took over at the end of Peter Parker's career.
Right.
If you like. Peter Parker was old. He was getting too old for it. And Eric Morales was the new Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Would he be an option to save Muddy in the Water so much with Tom Holland?
Yeah.
Why not just say, let's leave Tom out of it.
Yeah.
And we'll bring in Eric Morales as the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be, actually.
I don't know if it would work.
But that's not up to us to write it. So that's
everyone wants,
good thing. You know.
Everyone wants to see Spider-Man and Venom square off.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there was nothing wrong with Eric Morales. I think he's a great character, and Into the Spider-Verse is brilliant. But the matchup we all want to see is Venom and Spider-Man. So
yeah.
Will it happen? Who knows? Like we said, I'm just pleased it's not for me to decide that or even organise it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So yeah, Venom. I didn't catch its IMDb rating. It wasn't well received by critics, but judging by the amount of money it took, it was well received at the box office.
Yeah,
which is all the studio really cares about.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, we've said that before about films. Yeah. No one's going to turn down best part of $900 million.
Well, no, exactly.
I mean, I wouldn't.
6.7.
See, that is quite low.
It is.
For that amount of money.
But it did well.
6.7. I'd probably put it... is it the worst of the comic book films? No. Not by a lot. I mean, not by a long shot. Is it near the comic book accuracy? No.
But
it's something different.
Exactly.
And I think it's one of those films, you've got to go into it, forget what you know about that character, which I admit is hard. Because I think the more you know about a subject, the more narrow-minded you get. Because you get set in that...
Of course you do. It's like with anything, really. It's like if you read a book and then go see the film.
And they've changed
it. It's not completely the same. But that's the whole point of film. Yeah. It's one person's perspective on a certain character. And yeah, if you've read the book, give an example of Little Women, for example.
Yeah.
You read the book, you forget about all the characters, and then see the film. And then you can judge it better.
Well, that was one of the main... complaints about Lord of the Rings. Oh, you've left this bit out, you left that bit out.
Yeah, but they've only got a certain time amount to fit it all in, eh?
As somebody that's read Lord of the Rings, the bits they left out didn't really matter.
Exactly.
It didn't have any bearing at all on...
Exactly. I mean, they were long enough as it was, so, you know, putting those little bits in is not a good idea.
Yeah. But that's always the risk. I mean, the more you know about a subject, the more narrow-minded you get. Because you get that mindset of it has to be this way and that's it.
Yeah.
And I think this is a lesson, I think, to say, do you know what? We're just going to put what we know aside and just enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely.
And just go with it.
Yeah.
It might not be, it's probably not the best thing you'll ever see, but it's a good couple of hours. It's fun.
Exactly.
You know? They are quite, and Tom Hardy and Venom are quite funny together.
Yeah, they are. They work off each other very well.
Yeah.
They've got that sort of rapport with each other, which is great.
There was actually a phrase coined about the relationship between Venom and Eddie, a Simbrock.
Yeah.
As if they were in some kind of relationship. But I think that's just that horseshit fucking woke culture. That wants everything to be gay and transgender and rainbow and it's like, well,
there's
no, Eddie
wrong with that.
there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, but Eddie Brock was a straight character and the symbiote Venom bonded with him because they could do it at a cellular level, which is what a parasite needs to do.
Well, so it was really in its true form,
because there is a line where Venom says, "You're mine."
Yeah.
Which everyone took as a romantic. It's like, no.
Stop.
Stop. No. Venom is not in a romantic relationship with Eddie. He needs Eddie to live. Venom, 6.7. I'd give it a 7.
Yeah.
7. Yeah, 7. Mid 7s, maybe.
Give it a 7.5.
Just for what it is. It's fun. It's definitely something different. It's a laugh.
Exactly.
Right, no, it was me clattering the mic. Right, we're going to take a little break and we'll be back with you very shortly. So, we're back.
Yep.
And Becky, your second film, predictably, go for it,
is Guardians Volume 2.
Right.
Okay, so this was released in 2017. Mm-hmm. Again, directed by James Gunn. Starring more or less the same people. Except you've got Pom Klemelda, who's Mantis.
Have you?
Yes. I can't say her surname.
And also Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell's in there. Yeah. Even though I think he's Patrick Swayze. I get them both confused.
Even though one of them's dead.
I know. You know, God rest your soul, Patrick, you know, legend. The music, again, is by Tyler Bates. The budget for this film was $200 million.
But they've gone bigger.
No, they've gone smaller, because the first one was $232.
Yeah.
But they took at the box office $863.8 million.
That's more like it.
So that was a good... But it's only got an IMDb rating of 7.6.
Yeah.
Now, I would... Personally, because you know how much I adore this film, I would say it was a 9 in my book.
The main criticism I remember about this film, where in the first one, the chemistry that the Guardians had was mainly the lack of chemistry.
Yeah,
the
but
fact
it
that
worked.
The fact that they weren't a group at all, they were just a lot of bickering people.
Yeah,
that was their chemistry.
Yeah.
In this one, I think the criticism was that even though it's like 2-3 years after,
yeah,
it was still the same thing. They were still a bickering group of people, and it didn't feel as natural.
Oh, I did.
Yeah. That was just one of the sort of things about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, they've got some great songs in it.
There is.
So we've got Mr. Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Fox on the Run, which you adore.
Yep.
Lakeshore Drive, The Chain, Bring It On Home to Me. Southern Nights,
yep.
My Sweet Lord, and many more.
Yeah, there are.
And I sing along to all of them, don't I, when I watch the film?
Yeah.
How many times have I actually seen that film?
I don't know. A lot.
More?
Easy. Yeah.
20?
Probably.
I love it. It's just the fact that when we lead the Guardians number one, Groot's in a pot because he's been sort of...
Groot,
he
sacrificed himself.
He sacrificed, and he goes, "We are Groot" at the end of the first one. So then he becomes just a pile of twigs.
Yes.
So obviously Rocket's very upset by this because it's like his main man. So Drax puts it in a pot for him.
Yeah.
And when the credits are going, you'll see like this kind of dancing Groot
in a pot plant.
So when we meet him in volume two.
Yeah.
He's baby Groot.
Yes.
Now, he is the most adorable little thing ever, and I just love him.
Now, one thing that James Gunn actually had to come out and say is that baby Groot is not
an offspring.
A regeneration of Groot.
No.
This is, even though he came from the remains of Groot,
right.
He will be his own person.
Of course.
He doesn't have the memories of Groot. He doesn't.
No,
so
exactly.
This is a new creature.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got a baby Groot stuffed TY beanbag.
You have.
And he's lovely. And he sits by me because obviously I'm working at home at the moment. So he sits on the windowsill while I'm doing my work. So it makes me smile. I've got to have something.
Now this film delves more into Peter's past.
It does, yeah. Basically... meet him. Yes, Ego. Now, this is Peter's father.
Yes.
Now, they have a battle in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're passing their ship.
Mm.
Is Ego on top of his bubble.
Yes.
Spaceship.
Yeah.
Like, literally riding it like a horse, basically. Yeah. Then they sail past him. So that he follows Peter to this planet where they've crashed.
Yeah.
And he basically tells him, "I'm your father."
Yeah.
Okay. So, so Peter's like, "Oh my God, Mum was right. He was a spaceman."
Yeah.
So that kind of ties in quite nicely. But he's a bit of a dick, isn't he?
He does become a bit of a dick.
Yeah. So, going back to the Howard the Duck reference.
Okay.
There's a scene where Hondu is in this, like, town.
Yeah.
Because you've got Sylvester Stallone in this.
Yeah.
As, like, the Chief Ravenger.
Pretty much, yeah.
And, basically, Howard the Duck is sitting with one of those yellow women.
He is.
Smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
In his suit.
Yeah.
Looking Howard the Duckish.
Yeah.
So that's where he pops up.
So, there as well.
Which is great. So, but yeah, so basically Peter is Ego tries to kind of brainwash Peter.
Well, it's sort of revealed, isn't it, that Peter is half alien, which is why he was able to take the power.
No, he's half celestial.
That's right.
He's a half god.
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of maybe tying in the Thor kind of thing.
I don't know.
A little bit. But anyway, that's up for interpretation anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he kind of sort of tells Peter the story about how it all happened and how he loved his mother and everything. And then revealed further down in the film that he actually planted the brain tumour in his mum's head.
Yes. Now, Ego... he's actually got a bit of a plan, hasn't he? And he needs Peter
to come on board with it.
To come on board, because combined, he can make it happen.
Yeah.
Now, on Earth, it's this blob stuff, isn't it?
Blob stuff.
That just grows.
It's like expanding foam in it.
Yeah.
You know that stuff. But it's on a very larger scale, obviously. But yeah, so whenever they come to a bit of a head and they fight, mm-hmm. and then, you know, all of a sudden you get these like sudden surges of this expanding foam coming, and then it stops. So basically, Hondu gets involved as well.
Yeah.
And it's the line, isn't it? When they're trying to kill Ego from kill his brain. So he can stop all this magic.
Ego is not actually the man, is he?
No.
Ego is the planet.
Yeah, so Ego's the planet. So basically he's created this planet,
mm-hmm.
which he's rooted himself into.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you have to kill the brain to kill everything else. Which is at the core. So this is what they're trying to get to. And then you get that lovely scene between Rocket and Groot with the bomb.
Yes.
And Groot picks the wrong bomb, that button every time, and it's the one that blows everything up.
Yeah.
You know? And when he gets to it, he puts it in there, right? And he's like, he stops, and he goes, no, that one.
Yeah.
It's like, I am Groot, you know. So anyway, so they're fighting in this kind of core,
mm-hmm.
To, you know, get rid of Ego. And Hondu and Peter come down, Peter goes, says, you look like Mary Poppins, and was Mary Poppins cool? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. You know, and I just want to say that to somebody, you know, like an argument. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. You know, kind of thing. So basically they kill the brain.
Yeah.
Don't they? So Groot lovingly presses the right button, and then they get out of there.
Yeah.
And then you've kind of got this sort of ongoing love story between him and Gamora as well.
Yeah.
Which is like, will they, won't they? They, you know, it's kind of like that sort of thing.
I think the other sort of relationship in this film that really does change is between Gamora and
Nebula.
Yeah.
They
kind of draw a truce, don't they?
They do. They do draw a truce in the end. They just want to kill each other.
Yeah, constantly.
You know, like all siblings, I suppose, you know, or half siblings or whatever it is. But I just love the film. I really do.
Which is your favourite out of the two?
Number two. It's just got, for me, it's got more of a story of family.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's kind of like in these times that we're living through right now, family's probably the most important thing to cling on to. So that's probably kind of, it resonates a little bit.
Yeah.
But I just love two because, well, purely because of Baby Groot. I think he's the most adorable thing ever.
Mm.
And the songs in it as well are amazing.
For me, Volume 2... Me and a friend of mine had a discussion that Marvel have never done a bad film. They've done films that are better than others, but they've certainly never done a bad one. For me, I'd say Volume 1 was the better.
No.
The mix of characters was brilliant in the first one. They got away with it again just in the second.
Oh. But how do they just get away with it?
The film got to where it needed to be.
Yeah.
With the same formula.
Yeah.
But I think for a third Guardians, which apparently is coming.
Yes, I'm really excited.
I think it needs another aspect. Now,
there's talk that it's going to be more backstory for Groot and Rocket.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool. And then there's this Adam.
Adam, yeah.
He appears at the end of the film. He's kind of like this
He's a perfect being.
He's God. Is there one?
Adam in comic books. I can't remember what he was. Some sort of space Jesus, really.
Space Jesus.
There was a rumor that it would be Asgardians of the Galaxy, as yeah. is coined by Thor at the end of Endgame.
Yeah.
I think that was before Thor 4 was confirmed.
Right, okay.
So what I think is going to happen is that the beginning of Guardians 3 will involve Thor.
Which will start Thor 4.
Yeah.
That's how we got it from the trailer, didn't we? Or the kind of talking through it.
I think what's going to happen is Guardians 3 will begin with Thor as part of the crew. Then at some point Thor will break away,
mm-hmm.
and what we will get then is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3,
which is going to be the last one.
Yeah,
but the Guardians, I believe, are going to make cameo appearances.
They will appear in sort of future sort of assemble films. So they will probably appear again with the Avengers further down the line. Thor 4, which is called Love and Thunder, will probably pick up from where Thor leaves, where he leaves the Guardians.
Yeah.
Now, the story about Thor of that is that Jane Foster becomes Thor.
Yes.
If you know your comic book lore, Jane Foster developed cancer and Thor transferred his powers to her to save her. What happened to him? I don't know. Did he become a normal man? I really don't know. But yeah, Jane becomes Thor.
So we just don't know.
Volume 3 for the Guardians. Yeah, I'd like to, because I mean, Rocket has been clearly sort of modified, hasn't he?
He's not right. It's not right.
I mean, there are some moments where we see him. Like his back and everything, and he's all scars and
yeah, it looks like he's got like metal bits.
Yeah, so he's obviously been through a lot.
So it'd be nice to see his backstory, especially with Groot as well. That would be quite nice. Well, you know, I love Groot. Anyway.
Yeah,
I think he's amazing.
I think Rocket and Groot are probably the only two of them left to resolve. I mean, Gamora and Nebula. We know their stories.
Yeah, exactly. We know Peter's story. Yeah, Drax as well.
We know Drax's story, that his family were killed by Ronan the Accuser. Yeah, that's done because Ronan's gone.
Yeah. So it's just really
there is only really Rocket and Groot to sort of resolve.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I really did like how Thor and the Guardians were in Infinity War. The sort of, I mean, it was very...
The Angel Pirate.
The Angel Pirate. They were very bristly, weren't they, to begin with?
They were very bristly.
Would I like to see a whole film of that? Yeah, I think I kind of would. But that's not going to be...
Yeah. But anyway, I would recommend this film highly. I might have to watch it tomorrow. Just to remind myself of the beauty of it. I love it, don't I, Neil?
You do. For me, is it one of Marvel's best?
I wouldn't say it wasn't one of Marvel's best, but I just love it.
It feels like one of those films, and in any other film genre or any other run of films, this would be, you know, a huge mark against the MCU, because they've created something so big, so complex. It's not such a bad thing that Volume 2 just feels like it's one of those films to get them from here to there.
No, they
couldn't do that jump directly. They needed something in between. And there's several of those films, but it's not to say that they're bad films.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that I've attached myself to that film now.
Yeah. So
whatever you say about it negatively, I'm going to take
no,
to heart.
No, not at all. I mean, Doctor Strange was another one. I mean, that's a whole film just to introduce the Time Stone.
Yeah. But it's quite relevant for later on.
Kind of.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like, look, we need to bring the Time Stone into play. Let's create a film. And that is what Doctor Strange is. It's just to get the Time Stone into existence for us. Awesome. We knew it was there, but we'd never seen it.
Yeah. So if you want a bit of a giggle, listen to some
tunes. The one thing Guardians 2 is, for me, the relationship between the Guardians feels a little bit strained. It feels a little bit samey. But as a whole, the film is great fun. And the ending will choke you.
It will. It does it to me every time, doesn't it?
For me, it's got the best ending out of the two.
Yeah, of course it
because,
has.
Because, won't go too much into it, but there's a little bit of redemption there, isn't there? Yeah. And there's also a very funny sequence, really, where I think it's Rocket and Hondu are in a prison cell. And they are trying
to get Groot
to get the new headpiece
for
Hondu.
For the whistling stick.
Yeah, for Hondu.
Oh, it's absolutely hilarious.
The whistling stick, which is an arrow.
That's it. And then there's
she has seen this film, I promise.
I've seen it so many times. And there's this lovely sequence where they're using the whistling arrow.
Yeah.
To knock everybody around,
to kill them all.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
But to get to that point with Baby Groot, and they're trying to describe to him what the headpiece is.
And all he can say is, "I'm Groot."
And they describe how big it is, and he brings back a desk, and
a toe, a human toe.
It is a very, very, very good sequence.
It is very good.
For me, Volume 1's the better of the two. But that's not to say that this is a bad film.
I do disagree with you. Volume 2's better than the first. But anyway, we'll leave there.
What was it, IMDb'd?
7.5 or something.
I'd probably go with that.
No.
But,
you know,
but again, I mean, the Marvel films are very much like the Pixar films. They're almost ranked in their own little bubble.
Well, yeah.
You can't compare them.
I would say that they're the highest in their tier.
How do you mean?
Like, you know, Pixar, we were talking about tiers.
Yeah.
Of their film.
Yeah.
I think Marvel had that as well.
Yeah.
And I think Guardians will be at the higher end. Not at the bottom.
I'd definitely put Guardians 1 near the top.
No, I'd put Guardians 2 near the top.
And I'd put Volume 2 probably around the middle.
No. I'm not having that.
No.
We're going to probably have an argument about this now.
But again, like I said, it's not to say it's a bad film.
No,
it's
I know you're not saying that. I'm just giving my opinion on it. I think that, you know, from my perspective, Guardians 2 is probably, for me, at the higher end of that of their own tier.
Yeah.
Rather than in the middle.
Yeah.
So, but hey, we're going to agree to disagree on that one. So, it's personal choice at the end of the day.
What would you say is the best MCU film?
Oh, can I say Guardians?
You can if you want.
Guardians 2.
Yeah.
I just love it. I can sit and watch it 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 without getting bored. And then my second one would be Thor Ragnarok. And just because of Korg.
Yeah.
The rock man.
Yeah.
I love him.
I think, and this isn't to say it's my favourite, but I think the best one is The Winter Soldier, Captain America.
Mm.
It's got a very...
You have a special bond with Steve, don't you?
Captain America doesn't... He irritated, I won't lie, he irritated the piss out of me. Because we saw first meet him in the first Avenger. And I didn't really like him. And then he was much the same in Avengers Avengers Assemble. He irritated me, but I think he's supposed to.
Yeah.
Because, like they said...
Because he's supposed to be like that perfect...
Well, it's not that. He's a man out of his own time.
Yeah.
He's from...
1940.
The 1940s. So his morals, his way of thinking is...
It's completely different.
Is 70 years ago.
Exactly.
So I think he... I very much felt the frustration that we see between him and Tony, particularly in the first Avengers. But I think that was very deliberate.
Yeah.
But the Winter Soldier for me is their best film. I don't know if I have a favorite.
You must do.
I'd probably go Iron Man, the first one. Because that was the film that started it.
Yeah. With Tony.
Yeah. But I'd say Winter Soldier's the best for me.
Okay.
Obviously, Infinity War and Endgame are just insane.
Well, we were in at Infinity War, weren't we?
We were sat in the front row of the cinema. It was... crazy... It was so warm as well.
I know.
Do you remember?
It was really warm. Anyway, what's your second offering?
My second film tonight is a break from comic book films.
And I sit back because I haven't a clue.
about 100 years ago in the 90s, or whenever was before COVID-19, there was a... It became very fashionable to have a found footage film. The first one which started the trend was the Blair Witch Project. And there were so many that came afterwards. And the genre really was sort of hammered to death. And in the end, we were just like, really? Another found footage film? And they were always on like a shaky handheld camera and stuff. And it just... Yeah, they did it to death and carried on. And it kind of went away, and everyone was really pleased. And then in 2008, this film came out, and it's called Cloverfield. And it came out of nowhere. We didn't even know it was being made. It was madness, right? It was directed by Matt Reeves, who recently he's done Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And
I like Planet of the Apes.
He did War for the Planet of the Apes, and he's also directing The Batman with Robert Pattinson.
Oh, okay.
Next year. It was produced by mega geek J.J. Abrams.
Oh, wow.
His company, Bad Robot, they were behind the recent Star Trek films. They're involved with a lot, actually. I like J.J. He makes stuff... As a fan,
yes.
If you see his Star Trek films, I mean, again, the hardcore Star Trek fans hated them. I think Star Trek fans are easier than Star Wars fans, though.
I wouldn't agree with that.
Star Wars fans just aren't happy with anything.
I like Star Wars,
but the Star Trek films that he did, I mean, they are love letters to what went years before. You know, they're not designed to sort of rewrite stuff. They're just, he's made those films as a fan.
Yeah.
And you see it.
Yeah.
He's very attentive. He knows what he wants to do. Cloverfield, it used this crazy sort of viral marketing campaign that was released on the internet. And it was so clever. You would get, I think there was a fake sort of news report about a oil rig platform that had exploded. And the reporter was like, yeah, we're going over live to Bob, who's at the scene, getting like the crew off this oil rig before it goes down or before it blows up completely. Yeah. And these guys are all being loaded onto like the lifeboat and stuff. And then one of the guys on this oil rig, on this platform, as he's getting onto the lifeboat, I think it was, he starts shouting at the camera, "It wasn't an explosion, something hit us."
Oh, okay.
And then he's like quickly sort of taken away from the camera, and he's like, "I'm back to the studio." And then there was like a little bit later, there was another news report of like, say, a fishing fleet that had gone missing. And if you track them about where each location was, they were getting closer and closer and closer to New York. Now, Cloverfield starts. It actually starts with the main characters, Josh and Beth, in Beth's parents' apartment overlooking New York. And they've clearly spent the night together. And then they talk about going to a fairground, Coney Island. And then the tape cuts, I think, to his leaving party. Now, this takes place sometime after the events that we'd seen earlier. Him and Beth aren't getting on at all. She's brought another man to his leaving party. It's not good. Now, they're having this discussion on the rooftop of the building when there is a huge explosion in the distance. And the footage then moves outside of the building, and you see another explosion in the distance, and then you see this shape sort of coming towards our group, and when it lands, it's actually the Statue of Liberty's head. So something has come ashore, and it's not in a very good mood. What we find is that Beth has gone back to her apartment, and it's the film is basically the rescue mission to get to her and get out of New York, because the army are going to bomb the hell out of this place, and any survivors after this time, sorry, it's too late. It's quite clever. It lets you see the creature enough to scratch that itch. I mean, this is a monster film. You want to see the monster. So they'll show you it enough to satisfy you, and then they can get on with the story. Too many films promise so much and then they just don't show what it is you want to see until the end, at which point you're bored or worse, frustrated. JJ knows that, so he's like, right, I'll let you see it. It also has these tiny, well, much smaller creatures attached to it, which fall off, and they're about the size of dogs, I guess, and they bite and cause horrendous reactions to the people that they bite. They kind of explode. Cool. It's not nice. Unlike a lot of Hollywood blockbuster films, it doesn't have a happy ending. Which, watching it recently, feels right. It feels...
Why should it have a happy ending?
Exactly. It's...
Just because you want the rainbows and the butterflies doesn't mean it always has to be a happy ending.
Yeah. It's probably the best ending. And it's as nice as it can be. It did actually spawn two sequels. The first one was Number 10 Cloverfield Lane, which it's a sequel in name only. I mean, there's no mention of what has happened in New York, and it's a completely different outcome to in the ending. And the other one is called The Cloverfield Paradox, which again is only related to it by that name, Cloverfield. But the Cloverfield Paradox is set in space, and they're testing some sort of fusion engine, I think. But when they turn it on properly, strange things start to happen. And somebody has said, if you play the Cloverfield Paradox and the other two at the same time, when they turn that engine on, that it coincides with various events in the other films. Mm. Whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Okay.
The two sequels, I guess, number 10, Cloverfield Lane, was probably the best received. Cloverfield Paradox felt...
What about just Cloverfield?
Cloverfield was loved.
Yeah.
It was absolutely adored. Purely because it was so clever. And, like I said, they'd made it without anyone actually noticing, which is impressive when you see some of the footage.
Well, yeah.
I guess what we really want is a direct sequel to Cloverfield. There was talk. There's a scene on a I think it's a bridge off Manhattan, I think. And there's a brief moment where you see somebody else filming what's going on. You know, somebody in the distance has got a camera. And then you lose them and you carry on with your characters. Now, the story was that the sequel was going to pick up, was going to be that person.
But does it really need a sequel?
No, it doesn't.
Because some films, yeah, they have that open ending.
Yeah.
But do you really need that sequel?
No. I think where the annoyance has really come from is that we've had two films related to it. They carry the Cloverfield name,
mm.
but they're not sequels.
Yeah.
Or not the sequel that we want.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, okay, you've given us one which was admittedly pretty good. You gave us one which admittedly really wasn't.
Mm.
Why not give us what we really want?
Yeah.
Which is a direct sequel. Whether it'll happen, I really don't know. I kind of hope it will, and I kind of hope it doesn't.
So you're in that kind of limbo.
Yeah. I mean, if it ever came, if it was a genuine Cloverfield 2,
mm.
yeah, I'd be over the moon, but I'd be very nervous.
Mm. What's the facts and figures then, Neil?
It was made for peanuts, really. 25 million, which is nothing, comparatively. And it took a modest but respectable 172 million at the box office. They saved a lot. They didn't really have a noticeable cast, really. A couple of people that you kind of recognise from other bits and pieces. The main one that I did recognise is the cameraman, who is referred to as HUD in the film,
mm-hmm.
is actually... I think, is it TJ Miller?
Right.
Who, you probably know him more recently from the Deadpool films.
Okay.
He's the guy who works behind the bar.
Oh, yeah.
Him. He was in Underwater as well at the end of last year.
I heard Deadpool 3 is making an appearance.
Deadpool 3, probably, at some point.
I like Deadpool.
It very much depends, because I think that's owned by Fox, or Fox did the first two, and now Disney own Fox.
Yeah.
It just depends where Deadpool fits in the in Disney's plan. I don't think it's in their next 5-year plan.
Yeah.
Which would be a real shame.
Because I think we need a three. But anyway,
there will be a third, but yeah, I'm not sure when it'll be. Mm. I think Disney and Marvel have got other ideas. Stuff they want to get on with. But yeah, TJ Miller, I think, is the only person I really recognise from Cloverfield.
Mm.
As a sort of resurrection for the found footage films, you couldn't ask for much better. And I'd even say it's better executed than the original found footage film, which was the Blair Witch Project. The parody there, though, is without the Blair Witch Project, we probably wouldn't have Cloverfield.
Well, not necessarily.
I don't know. This film, I don't think, works as a traditional filmed film.
Mm.
I think it works as well as it does because of the found footage aspect.
Right, okay.
if you try to make this film like, you know, a normal filmed film, you just end up with Godzilla or King Kong. You just end up with another monster movie with another city being destroyed. What makes this one different and special is that fan footage aspect of it. Do I want a sequel? Truly, probably not. But out of 10, I don't even know what it is rated. Like we said, this episode sort of crept up on us and we're already a day late.
Shall I
have
Google?
A quick look. Because Blair Witch came back, didn't it, a few years ago? It was called... Well, there was the Blair Witch Project and then they did...
Never saw the first one, so...
They did a film called The Blair Witch Book of Shadows, which was terrible. And then a few years ago, or maybe a couple of years ago, they did a film just called Blair Witch, which was like a direct sequel to the original, which wasn't bad.
7.
The Cloverfield's only a 7.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tricky one.
Where would you put it?
I suppose compared to other films, yeah, there are always going to be better films than this, but for a film of its genre, of its type...
Yeah.
If you compared it against other found footage films, it's easily one of the best of them. And if you just judged it against that sort of subgenre, it's easily an 8.5, a 9.
Yeah.
But yeah, I suppose compared against every other film out there, I suppose, yeah, a 7, 7.5 maybe. Yeah.
Cool.
So if you haven't seen it, it's 2008. So it has been quite a while. And it'd be understandable if it has sort of passed you by now. It's well worth a look. A lot of people said that with these films, they get sort of motion sickness and whatever. I know that they're not for everybody, but if you want something different, it's well worth a watch.
Would you like a little bit of good news?
Let's have some good news.
You know, Captain Tom...
Captain Tom, the man
who walked around his garden 100 times, he's been knighted. He's going to be knighted. So we salute you, Sir Tom. Well deserved.
Indeed.
You did such an incredible fundraising for the NHS.
He's managed to raise more money for the NHS than Brexit has.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll leave the politics aside because Neil gets a bit passionate about that. Hats off to you, Sir Tom, and we congratulate you for that.
Major Tom, obviously, is a veteran of the war. And, what was it, 2 weeks ago, a week ago, was VE Day.
Yeah.
And, which was England, and here on the 9th was our Liberation Day. So with those in mind, we actually had the idea for next week's show, which was that we were going to pick a couple of war films each to sort of...
And I've got a couple of recent ones.
You have. We actually have recent films.
We really have recent films because most of our pre-orders are coming down. Well,
the worry is that Becky's had a couple this week or in the last sort of 10 days or so. Now, I've got maybe 3 or 4 things coming in June, which is all very good and exciting for me, but we're getting to the point where these were films that were released, you know, not long before bloody lockdown. So we don't know how many pre-orders there are left in the world at the moment because there hasn't been anything released.
No.
But... Yeah, next week's episode, we promise we will be a little bit more prepared for next week.
This week was a bit...
This week has been sort of sellotaped together and held together a little bit with happy thoughts.
Yes, and hopefully we've done a good job.
We've got through it. I don't think either of us had really like the full notes and everything that we normally have. Next week, we'll be back to our normal selves. Got a couple of ideas for what films to do. I know you have 2 very different films.
Very different films.
I know one of mine for sure. and I'm sort of in two minds over the other one. But we'll put some stuff out on the social media and everything nearer the time.
Please get in touch if you want us to look at anything.
Yep. As always, get in touch. Make your suggestions. Tell us we're rubbish on the back of today's show. No, keep sharing the stuff. It's, you know, we're not going to get rich and famous without it.
No.
So, and until next time, guys, as always, look after yourselves.
Stay safe.
Stay safe. And we'll be back with you very soon. Bye for now.
Bye.